when I made the series In Their Own Words, telling the story of Czechoslovakia through the radio archives, I did not include the events of 1968, the Prague Spring, the subsequent Soviet-led invasion, and its bitter consequences. This is the first of two programs to fill that gap, giving us insights into the period through the voices of those who lived through it.
Potkala jsem ho, pršelo, a domů se mi nechtělo. Tak jsem mu řekla, ať se ke mně schová.
The 1960s are often remembered as a golden age in Czechoslovak radio. The political thaw that started at the beginning of the decade brought with it a sense of openness and optimism, and this was reflected in the radio, just as it was in so many other fields of cultural life, from film to music and theatre.
Rozezná pravý mistr, jo? Když přijde skutečný pianista, tak přijde k pianu, teď čeká.
The satirical cabaret of Prague's Semaphore Theatre featured quite regularly on the airwaves. As the political atmosphere relaxed, the two stars of the cabaret, jazzmen and actors Jiří Suchý and Jiří Šlitr, found their way onto the cultural mainstream.
Mohl ovšem za dolary.
Despite several risque jokes at the expense of the regime, in this sketch, another famous member of the Semaphore team, Miroslav Horníček, is joking that he'll only use foreign words if he's paid in hard currency, Czechoslovak radio was quite happy to broadcast the Semaphore New Year's Eve show on December the 31st, 1967. Here's Jiří Šlitr singing in deliberately dreadful English.
Ever since that night, we've been together, lovers at first sight, in love forever. It turned out so right for strangers in the night. I like jazz.
And thus began that most momentous of years, 1968.
Návrh by mal vytvárat tiež podmienky pre prípravu dlhodobejšieho programu strany.
Within days, there was a seismic shift in Czechoslovak politics. On January the 5th, Alexander Dubček became first secretary of the Communist Party, the most powerful position in the country. Dubček immediately set Czechoslovakia on a course of economic and political reform, hoping to create what he famously described as socialism with a human face.
Vážené sudružky a sudruhovia, januárové plénum středního výboru komunistické strany.
Here is Dubček opening a meeting of the party central committee on April the 1st, outlining the reforms. This extract reflects some of the paradoxes of the time. Dubček's sincere belief in change and his real enthusiasm at public support for the reforms is evident, but at the same time he was at heart a party man, and the speech is veiled in familiar jargon about the leading role of the Communist Party.
Zvláštnost celého tohoto procesu tkvě v tom, že bol v největší části hlavně jeho.
What has made this whole process so special, he said, is that above all, especially in terms of the pace of change, it has been determined by the creative and spontaneous activity of the broad mass of the people, with the communists in the vanguard. In this spirit, and in accord with the plenary session of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia, people have acted without the slightest manipulation and without being given commands from above. The role of the party is to recognize people's understanding, to raise it to a higher plane, to support progressive thinking and acts.
Dotvárať ho, zušľachťovať, vyzdvihovať progresívne myslenie a činy.
A few days later, on April the 5th, 1968,
Dubček took reforms a step further. The so-called action program of the Communist Party was announced, and one of its most important steps was to lift press censorship. Suddenly, all sorts of new programs appeared on Czechoslovak radio and television, with titles like Face to Face, Public Interest, Investigations, Where Are We Heading, Facts. But the Soviet Union was watching closely and put ever greater pressure on Dubček to reverse the reforms. More than 25 years later, in 1994, the chief archivist of the Russian Federation made available a transcript of the last telephone conversation between Dubček and the Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev, before Soviet tanks brought the reforms to a violent and abrupt end on the night from the 20th to the 21st of August 1968. It was August the 13th. Brezhnev called Dubček from Yalta in the Crimea. He was furious that Dubček had, as he saw it, failed to keep a promise to rein in the Czechoslovak media, or as he preferred to call it, the organs of mass communication. Here is a short extract from a reconstruction of that conversation. It was broadcast by Radio Prague in 2003, narrated by Pavla Horáková, with Rob Cameron in the role of Brezhnev, and myself as Dubček, whom Brezhnev addresses as Sasha, the familiar form of his first name.
Sasha, the problem isn't in the fact that you met with journalists. We came to an agreement when we met. We agreed that all mass media, the press, radio, television, will be brought under the control of the Central Committee of the Communist Party and the government, and that all anti-Soviet and anti-socialist publications will be stopped. In the Soviet Union, we're keeping our side of the deal and are not engaging in any open criticism of Czechoslovakia. But as far as the Czechoslovak organs of mass communication are concerned, they are continuing unhindered to attack the Soviet Communist Party, the Soviet Union, and there have even been cases of attacks on leading figures in our party. They're calling us Stalinists and things like that. I ask you, what is that supposed to mean?
Dubček responds with silence. As the conversation goes on, Brezhnev's tone gets more aggressive. Again, he wants to know why the reformists have not yet been purged from leading positions. Dubček's justification, on the basis that decisions have to be taken collectively, is worlds away from the simple, unbending truths of real socialism, Brezhnev style.
Leonid Ilyich, this issue cannot be just solved by a directive from above, coming into effect everywhere at once. We have to wait until both Slovaks and Czechs have agreed to a suitable solution. That's why the party leadership can only solve this question by telling the government and the minister to prepare suitable arguments for a final solution to be carried out a little later.
How much later?
In October, the end of October.
What can I say, Sasha? This is nothing but more deception. This is more proof that you are deceiving us. I can't put it any other way. I will speak quite bluntly. If you prove unable to solve this question, then it seems to me that your party leadership is no longer in control.
But this isn't deception. We are trying to fulfil the obligations to which we committed ourselves, but in a way that is possible in the current complex situation.
But we must take issue with this, and we have no choice but to reassess the situation and take new independent measures.
Comrade Brezhnev, take whatever measures your Politburo considers fit.
If you answer me like that, then I have no choice but to tell you, Sasha, that that was an ill-considered statement.
But why does everything have to be so rushed?
The answer to that question came a week later. On the 17th of August, the Kremlin took the decision to occupy Czechoslovakia. On the night from the 20th to the 21st of August, the occupation began.
In the days that followed the Soviet-led invasion, Czechoslovak radio was at the centre of events, as we'll be hearing in the next few minutes. But we'll start with Radio Moscow, on the morning of the 21st of August, with an official Soviet version of events.
State officials of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic have asked the Soviet Union and other allied states to give the fraternal Czechoslovak people urgent assistance, including assistance with armed forces.
Radio Moscow there, on a rather crackly recording, claiming quite untruthfully that Czechoslovak state officials have invited the country's allies to intervene. Broadcasts on Czechoslovak radio could not have been more different. As Soviet tanks gathered outside the radio building, reporters did their best to carry on broadcasting. Here is the radio's Jiří Dienstbier.
Ještě tady máme zprávu skupina vedoucích pracovníků ministerstva československých zahraničních.
After calling on listeners not to risk their lives by gathering outside the radio building, he states that the foreign ministry has asked the radio to broadcast a message that the borders of Czechoslovakia have been broken illegally and against the will of the state and party, and he appeals to people not to resist the invaders.
Vysílat už nebudeme asi dlouho, protože před budovou je sovětská pěchota, která...
Jiří Dienstbier ends by warning that broadcasts will soon be forced off the air as Soviet troops are massing in front of the building.
Pěchota, která již jistě brzy obsadí budovu Československého rozhlasu.
The Czechoslovak president Ludvík Svoboda also recorded a message for the radio. His voice shook as he spoke.
Stalo se tak bez souhlasu ústavních orgánů státu, které...
He too stressed that the occupation was being carried out against the will of the Czechoslovak government. In a tone of near despair, he said he would do all he could to ensure that foreign troops left. Radio Prague and other Czechoslovak radio stations also tried to get the message across abroad.
We appeal to all radio stations in Romania, Yugoslavia, please inform about the situation in the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic.
And the local station in České Budějovice appealed to German soldiers from the East German People's Army to turn back in the name of international workers' solidarity. Staff at Czechoslovak Radio played a cat-and-mouse game with the occupying forces. At first, they managed to continue broadcasting directly from the radio headquarters, despite the presence of tanks outside. Again and again, they repeated the government and party leadership's appeal for calm. Above all, they stressed the message from the country's leaders that the occupation was unwanted and illegal. But the Soviets were already hard at work to silence the radio. The chairman of the Central Board for Communications, Karel Hoffmann, was a political hardliner, and in collaboration with the invaders, gave the order that all medium-wave transmitters be shut off. Despite his efforts, broadcasts continued.
Všechny vysílače, které však máme k dispozici, byly postupně vyřazeny z provozu.
All the transmitters which we had at our disposal have been gradually forced out of operation, and we do not even know how many of you, our listeners, can hear us. But we shall try to stay in touch with you, even though some of our phone lines are cut off, and since 2 in the morning, foreign aircraft have been circling above the Czechoslovak radio building. Once the radio building was occupied, radio staff went to great lengths to keep on the air, taking risks and improvising at every step. Dear listeners, we must now leave you as the army of occupation is on its way, but we hope that shortly we'll be able to start broadcasting again from another private apartment. In the following days, Radio Prague, which then as now served as the radio's international service, was to play a central role.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia, broadcasting continuously in English, French, German and Italian, as well as Czech, and bringing you late news bulletins and reports as we receive them of the situation here in occupied Czechoslovakia.
Radio Prague became the voice of free Czechoslovakia to the world, broadcasting through mobile transmitters, which ironically had originally been provided by the Soviets. It could be heard loud and clear throughout Europe.
We are transmitting in the 49-meter band on 6.055 megacycles. However, since this frequency is being jammed, please tune us in by turning slightly to the right or left of this position on your radio dial.
40 years later, Jiří Dienstbier, who had taken part in the secret broadcasts, remembered just how central a role they had played in keeping people informed.
It was very important because it was the only means of communication at this moment which kept the whole nation informed. It was a guarantee of unity of the nation because people knew that no one collaborated here. President, government, so some local collaborators couldn't succeed because people knew exactly what happened.
And then a huge column of mostly young people formed up at the bottom of the square and proceeded slowly up it towards the Wenceslas statue, the very symbol of their fight for national freedom.
The invasion happened in the middle of summer. Prague was full of tourists and of international teams of journalists reporting on Dubček's reforms. Both Czech and international journalists went out into the streets to gather the views of some of the tens of thousands who were out to protest against the Soviet tanks.
I am a Czech student, 22 years old. At the very moment I am recording this, the Russian tanks, prepared for any action, are standing in a big park just under my windows. I don't know whether I ever finish my studies, meet my friends abroad again, and I could count and count, but at this moment everything somehow loses its sense. At 3 a.m. 21st August 1968, I woke up to a completely different world from that one I went to sleep in.
And here are two students talking to the BBC on the third day of the invasion, August the 24th.
I have been spoken with many Russian soldiers. You can't explain them anything. They are like the wall. You say them why you came. They said, we are your brothers, we are liberators. I say, no, it isn't true. You must see that there is no contrarevolution, that nobody wants you, that nobody needs your help. No, I'm your friend, I'm the brother, and I came to make freedom. I came to make order in your country.
They are always saying, we want to fight against contra-revolution in Czechoslovakia. But I think they don't know what contra-revolution means. From January, we had a new government which united the Czech nation. And now the Russians came to make another government. This is contra-revolution.
I think this occupation was very bad for young people, and because young people were very happy in our republic within these 6 months from January to August. There was so big enthusiasm that you can't believe.
Outside Czechoslovakia, students were every bit as shocked by the invasion, as we can hear in the following extract. This is part of a Deutsche Welle report from the then German capital, Bonn, on the day of the invasion, August the 21st.
In front of the Soviet embassy near Bonn, from early in the morning, groups of students and young people assembled to demonstrate against the invasion of Czechoslovakia.
Can you tell me who's demonstrating here?
Well, it's all sorts of people, young people, students, some journalists I see around here, people from all walks of life, I would say.
And why are they demonstrating?
Well, of course, they are all fed up with the Russian intervention in Czechoslovakia.
What's your personal reaction? What was your reaction when you heard about it this morning?
Well, I was gravely shocked when I was called at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I think this is really the worst thing that could have happened to East-West relations and to all of us who thought that there might be a way of getting closer to the East.
I was very, very sad, because Czechoslovakia was the hope for young people in East and West, in the Eastern and the Western world, to show that democracy and socialism goes together, that there was one country trying to have a policy for people, not for some power interest, just for people. And it was very, very sad news this morning.
In the meantime, things were happening on the international diplomatic front. Within a few hours of the tanks crossing the border, the United Nations Security Council met for a special meeting to discuss what to do about the invasion. Czechoslovakia's ambassador to the UN, Jan Mužík, was unequivocal.
We categorically request immediate withdrawal of the armed forces of the five states of the Warsaw Treaty and full respect for the state sovereignty of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic.
But the Soviet ambassador, Jakub Malík, was predictably defiant, repeating the mantra that the invasion amounted to fraternal assistance.
Попытки империалистической реакции вмешиваться во внутренние дела Чехословацкой.
Attempts by the forces of imperialist reaction to meddle in the internal affairs of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic and to put a wedge between socialist countries will not be tolerated. The meeting continued the next day, August 22nd, when several countries proposed a resolution condemning the invasion. On one of the rare occasions in its history, the United States, through its UN ambassador George Ball, expressed solidarity with a socialist country.
We identify ourselves with the declarations of the Presidium of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia and the Presidium of the National Assembly, protesting against the occupation of Czechoslovakia.
By this time, there was also growing concern for the well-being of the Czechoslovak leadership. The British ambassador to the UN, Lord Karadžić, spoke up, adding drama to the meeting.
On this, I ask a direct question of the Soviet ambassador. Let Ambassador Malík tell us now that the President and the First Secretary of the Communist Party and other acknowledged leaders of Czechoslovakia are free and safe. Let Ambassador Malík confirm that they will not be arrested and will not be molested. Let him confirm that they will be permitted to continue to speak and work for their people.
Soviet Ambassador Malík continued to be evasive. He replied with a question of his own, accusing Western countries of hypocrisy. Who drowned the villages and cities of Vietnam in blood? He also insisted that the troops had been invited into Czechoslovakia.
Воинские подразделения социалистических стран, как известно, вступили на территорию.
The armed forces of socialist countries, as is well known, entered the territory of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic on the request of the country's leaders. The Security Council meeting continued for a third and unprecedented fourth day. At this point, Czechoslovakia's Foreign Minister Jiří Hájek joined the debate. He'd been out of the country at the moment of the invasion, so he was able to travel to New York to deny Ambassador Malik's claim in person.
No such demand was ever made. This is an act of use of force which cannot be justified by any reasons.
I hardly need add that the Soviet Union, supported by Hungary, which at the time held a non-permanent seat on the Security Council, blocked the resolution condemning the invasion. The issue was quietly dropped from the Security Council agenda.
Immediately after the invasion, Dubček and other prominent reformists in the government were interned and then swept off to Moscow, and for several days their fate was unknown. During that time, they were bullied into signing an agreement accepting the Soviet intervention and promising to restrain the media and protect socialism in Czechoslovakia. Only one Politburo member, František Kriegel, refused to sign the document. After their return, Alexander Dubček went on air on August the 27th. This was one of those moments in history when the meanings of the words being said tell us far less than the tone in which they are spoken.
Celkom otvoreně chcem tiež povedať, že skúsenosť.
He tried to describe and explain the situation, talking in phrases that had little meaning, and after several sentences, his voice broke down completely.
Vážení posluchači, prosím, abyste mi preminuli ak tu a tam sa prejaví nejaká prestávka.
He apologized to listeners and then went silent. The Czechoslovak radio journalist Margita Kolarová later remembered the moment that in many ways symbolized the tragedy of 1968 in an interview for Radio Prague.
Najednou zmlknul a nemluvil, byla pauze.
There was a silence. I didn't know what to do, whether I should start saying something to apologize to the listeners, but that wouldn't have been the diplomatic thing to do. So I waited, and I indicated to the people around that I needed a glass of water for Mr. Dubček. They brought the water, and as I put the glass on the table in front of him, the sound it made brought him back to his senses. After quite a long while, he began to speak again, and there were tears running down his face. It was only the second time in my life that I'd seen a man cry.
At this moment, it must have been clear to anyone listening that there would be no turning back. Třeba se vřeště šumění, můj sen ve skutek promění. A přijde ten, kdo řekne, mám tě rád. And that brings today's program to an end. Thank you very much for listening. This was a special program looking at the events of 1968 as part of our series In Their Own Words. You can write to us at english@radio.cz. For the time being, from me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague International, goodbye.